Hello and welcome back to the British Antarctic Survey's Ice World podcast. I'm Nadia Frontier and we're continuing this series with more conversations focused on the summer science being carried out on the Antarctic continent. In this episode, I spoke to three scientists from the BioPol project. This acronym means Biogeochemical Processes and Ecosystem Function in Polar Ecosystems and Their Global Impacts. PhD students Laura Taylor, Kat Turner and marine ecologist Emily Rowland joined me online to speak about what this title means and how to go about measuring it. They also talked about the first BioPol cruise and how they're already gearing up for the second. Emily, or Em as you're preferred to be called, could you please introduce yourself? How long have you been working with the British Antarctic Survey?
I've been with BAS since 2018, so started as a PhD student, now a marine ecologist, as you said, so went straight from my PhD into a continuation of what I was doing previously, working on plastic pollution, and now more in the sort of biogeochemistry side of things as well.
And what did you do before starting a PhD?
I did a master's looking at aggression among killer whale communities. So it was a sort of broad animal behaviour master's, and that was the sort of specific route that I went down, looking at their social structure among killer whales, which was really interesting to look at.
Laura, when did you start your PhD and why did you want to do a PhD about Antarctica?
Yeah, so I started my PhD at BAS in 2022, so I'm just over halfway through now. And why I wanted to do a PhD in Antarctica is actually interesting. Antarctica wasn't the focus of what I was applying for initially. So I knew I wanted to do a PhD in biogeochemistry, which is kind of the core theme in BioPol. And I was previously more interested in global biogeochemistry, so things that happened all over the world. But Antarctica sucked me in because of the impact it has on the rest of the planet. So regardless if you're trying to only think about Antarctica, if you're doing biogeochemistry, you inevitably will end up thinking about the rest of the world as well because of the impact that it has. So I'd say that's probably how I got into it, but it wasn't something I was initially looking for. It kind of found me that way around.
It's definitely a good incentive. And what did you study in your undergraduate degree?
Yeah, so I studied environmental sciences for my undergraduate degree, so very general. And then I did a master's in climate change science and policy.
Did you have any work experience as well before coming into your PhD?
Yeah, nothing particularly related to the industry. So I'd done a lot of roles in administration, and most recently, before I started my PhD, I was an office manager, which comes up surprisingly frequently in my PhD, but it's nothing to do with science.
Oh, it's so interesting though. I mean, I suppose all these skills to an extent are transferable. And Kat, what about you? What field do you come from?
So I am slightly more on the physics side of things. So I am more concerned with how the ocean temperatures and factors such as density or salinity are changing with time, in particular with climate change. Kind of the skeleton, let's say, behind a lot of the other processes. And I think so far, what I found really interesting is physics has always been seen as its own thing. And we're now realizing actually everything is related because the physics will affect the chemistry, it will affect the biology, it will affect the physics.
What are the core questions of your current PhD, Kat?
So most of my PhD is actually on modelling rather than observations. So I look at how ocean warming is changing on long time scales, such as centuries, and in particular how the climate change that is happening now could change the profile of what the ocean would look like in, say, 100 years. And I think my future work will also look at 200 to 300 years as well into the future.
It's a pretty massive question. Exciting. Lots to do in 4 years. Now let's talk about BioPol. Laura, can you introduce BioPol as a concept, please, and tell us what it's about?
Yeah, so you mentioned the title of BioPol already, that long sentence is quite a good summary of what it does. So the BioPol project is aiming to look at how biogeochemical processes and the functioning of ecosystems is impacting polar systems, so both the Arctic and Antarctic, and the impact this will have on the rest of the planet when the water moves, essentially, so when the ocean moves towards the tropics and to the rest of the world. So it's doing this through quite a lot of areas, both through looking at the physics that Kat tends to work on, the biogeochemistry, and on the ecology. So it's trying to bring all of those aspects together.
And how many cruises will there be to collect data for the BioPol project?
Yeah, so there's two main cruises that are planned, although there's another smaller third one, which has come up as well as the original plan. And then there's lots of land-based fieldwork as well at the research bases.
So one of those biopole cruises has already happened. So yourself and Kat participated in that last year. And now in a month's time, there's the second cruise, which all three of you will be attending. And then what's happening in the third cruise?
Yeah, so the third cruise is a smaller group of people that have managed to get onto the ship to do some science work on the way from the Falklands to Rothera and back. So they've just managed to get a little bit of extra time and money to be able to take more samples in that area.
Amazing. And what's your involvement with the Biopole project? Why are you going on Biopole 2 and not Biopole 1?
So Biopole is not a project that I was initially part of. I've moved into biogeochemistry through, starting to work on the postdoc, which is not just plastic pollution, but is looking at how plastic can impact the carbon cycle. So how quickly, carbon trapped within fecal pellets, for instance, can sink to the seabed, and how that might change when it's incorporated with plastic, because this changes the density of things. This is how I started to move onto the biogeochemistry. Now I am part of the team on Biopole 2. It's a lot of filtration, so you need quite a few people involved to filter all of the water for the different parameters that we're measuring. And that's kind of how I got involved.
And how many cruises had you been on before going on? Well, how many cruises have you done before you get to this second Biopole?
This is going to be my fifth cruise. So started in 2018, went on a cruise almost immediately after starting my PhD. I think it was the very next month I went straight onto a cruise. So that was an interesting learning experience. And then almost every year since then, I've been on one of the cruises. So this Biopole cruise is also paired with the Western Corbox cruise. And that's mainly what I've done previously. So that's predominantly zooplankton based. And it's looking at the abundance of krill and different animals, basically trying to take a snapshot of what's in the environment. So that's a time series that's been going on for some time, which is paired with this Biopole cruise as well.
And that Western Corbox, that work happens out of South Georgia. So where exactly is Biopole located? What regions is it targeting and sampling?
The original plan of Biopole was they were going to try and target as many areas as possible. So it makes it easier to kind of combine the plants. But there's a lot of focus on the kind of northern Weddell Sea area currently. So the first cruise, we completed a quicker 10-day transect in the northern Weddell Sea around the Powell Basin. So some of this cruise is going to be focused on that area, as well as combining with South Georgia and a long line kind of between South Georgia through the Scotia Sea into the northern Weddell Sea as well.
Huge area. Wow. And Kat, for you, was this your first time at sea?
Yeah, it was actually. So it was a really incredible experience. I think I was really lucky because I was living with Laura at the time, and she was just such a great person to go to because she'd gone on a cruise before. So I think all those worries that a person usually would have before, I had a friend that I could go to. But it was such an incredible experience, so different from anything I'd ever done before.
And how did you get this opportunity as part of your PhD project, more on the kind of modelling side of it?
I feel as though Bass overall does value getting a lot of experience. And while it is true I work on models, there is a lot to be learned from observations as well, because I think I was very guilty for just assuming observational data was perfect. So if my model didn't match it perfectly, it was kind of quite a bad model. But actually then seeing how the data is collected, even the variation within the different instruments, has given me a much better idea for calibrating my own models. And also it's just really cool to see those processes that I only have ever seen on computers actually happen in real life.
It's so useful that you were able to go on that project. And this actually isn't relating directly to your PhD. So is it nice to have a bit of time out to be able to switch from what you're doing? And you say it is related, but the actual substance of the work itself...
Yeah, it's not related at all, really. I think it's actually really good for me to also widen the scope of my PhD, because I think particularly with physics PhDs, we do have a bit of a tendency to really channel ourselves into a very specific area, which is then also incredible because you end up being a specialist and probably also a world specialist in that area. But being able to see how other areas of science work as well, I think in general makes me a better scientist, to be able to see just how everything else works as well.
Absolutely. And great that you get to go on the second cruise. So Laura, could you just summarise like the core objectives of BioPol and exactly what the different objectives we'll be trying to achieve from BioPol Cruise 1 and BioPol Cruise 2?
Yeah, so the core objectives of BioPol are quite wide. So it splits into four different sub-projects, essentially, where one of them is looking at what nutrients are being inputted into the oceans in the Arctic and Antarctic and how. So this kind of relates the physics and chemistry of how the nutrients are coming off of glaciers and ice that are kind of fixed to the continent, carving in the form of icebergs or melting directly off of glaciers, and how that travels and enters the water column where it can be used. Then the second project is essentially looking at what happens next. So it's looking at the smaller life forms of the Southern Ocean, so the phytoplankton and the zooplankton, and how they would be using the nutrients to grow their communities, to exist as organisms, but then when they die, what happens next? And that is mostly the carbon that is in their bodies is stored in the deep ocean in different proportions. So it's looking at figuring out how that process works. And then the third package is modelling. So it is taking the understanding of the first one and the second one and building models of the ocean to be able to predict in more numerical quantities and into the future how these processes are going to happen. And then the fourth package is about communicating this outwards to the public. So how we bring this all together and synthesize it so that people can understand it. So I guess that's a good summary.
You explained that really well. And will those objectives stay true for both cruises, BioPol 1 and BioPol 2? Is the point of doing it across two different years to capture annual variation, or is it to expand sampling sites?
Yeah, so those four themes, I guess the modelling one doesn't come so much into the cruises. It's kind of something that's done later with what you find from the cruises. But the first and second packages definitely do. The scope of the timing of the first two was that the goal would be able to capture some samples in the Antarctic spring and then some in the Antarctic autumn. So one of them, the first one, we started in November, so it was quite early in the season. And then this one will be February to March. It's a bit later in the season. We kind of didn't have a big cruise in the December, January time. But it was a goal of BioPol, mostly because the coverage of samples in seasons other than summer in the Antarctic oceans is very low. So if BioPol was able to contribute towards that, it would have made a big difference. With copepods, one of the most dominant zooplankton groups, they have a lipid sac, which is essentially part of their body, which is filled with fat, which is made of carbon. And at the start of the season, this is almost empty because they haven't started growing it yet. And over the summer, as they eat more and more, they accumulate this fat, which they store on their bodies and keep for a long time. And then when it gets to the end of the summer, they sink into the deep ocean, which is effectively to hibernate, and they stay in the deep ocean. And then they will then return later on once the winter is over, I think. But then not all of them will come back. And some of this carbon material then gets stored. So they wanted to see on the first cruise what it was like before they'd accumulated all of this carbon material in their bodies, and then on the second cruise what it was like right before they sunk into the deep ocean. So I think that also is kind of a very scientific implication of that timing. It's not my work, so I don't really know what I'm looking at, but I always enjoy it when someone says that there are creatures that you can go and see, and I enjoy looking at them and asking questions, be like, oh, what's this called? Have you given him a name?
Amazing. So Laura, what was your role then, if you're not working with the copepods? What position did you take on BioPol? I know you're quite a senior role.
Yeah, so on the first BioPol cruise, a series of circumstances led to me running the biogeochemistry section of the cruise. And they said to me, after having seen me on my first time on a cruise, they said, we think you can do it. What do you think? It is going to be really hard work and a massive step up, but do you think you've managed? And I kind of tentatively said, yeah, I'll give it a go. So I did. Doing this, I was managing the collection of samples for 11 parameters across biogeochemistry. And this is mostly in water samples from a CTD, which is the instrument we put off the side of the ship. And you lower it all the way to the bottom of the ocean so it can go to however deep the ocean is at that point. And then on the way back up, it collects water of different depths. And then you put this water into lots of different bottles, or you filter it onto filter papers so that you can analyze it later. So essentially what I was doing was coordinating, making sure all of that water came back from the right places and was stored in the right ways so that we could do the analysis we wanted to do with it.
And as an early career researcher, how did you feel having that opportunity? Do you really think it gave you quite a big boost?
Yeah, I think it was definitely very daunting to begin with. And I think I probably at the start didn't appreciate the scale of what I'd said yes to, and that became clearer as I went on and went through the process. But I'm very lucky that my PhD supervisors and the people I have working around me at BASS are incredibly supportive, and they put a lot of effort into making sure that I was happy and confident in what I was doing, and they were always a phone call away. And I definitely think a year later, I've gained so much confidence from it and understanding, and going into my next cruise, I know so much more about how everything works.
And Emily, what will your setup be? What specifically will you be looking at?
So for the biogeochemistry, one of the engineers has made a new filtration kit, which is going to make our life a lot easier on board, because it's a lot less manual intervention of continuously normally have to fill up these 250ml cups, and you have to make sure that, so from the CTD, you take water samples from these cylinders into, then decant them into carboys, and then you're pouring the carboys through different filters, basically. So just paying attention to make sure things don't get confused and that you're measuring the correct depth on the correct filter. So this new setup, you can just fill up these bottles and screw them on to the top of the filtration rig. So that basically means that hopefully we'll be working a lot more efficiently than it has done previously. I'm also working on the mooring. So this is lots of instruments attached to a buoy that have been left out since the last Biopol cruise. So we've got like pH sensors, oxygen sensors. I'll be dealing with the sediment trap. So this is it's a huge funnel, basically, with a carousel of bottles that rotate underneath. So it catches sinking matter into the different bottles, which you can program to rotate at different times, so you can capture different points in the cycle, is the idea. So that will be a lot of programming and doing tests to make sure it's working as it should before redeployment, and then taking all of the data off of the old sensors as well.
And in terms of the sediment traps, that sounds really cool. Are you able to program them from a distance? You said they were put out last year from the last Biopol cruise. So could you program them from Cambridge to rotate and collect different data? Or do you have to be right above them in order to program them?
You have to recover them. They have to be connected at the moment to set these programs. Hopefully in the future, we're looking at trying to reduce the amount of people that have to go south, and really trying to look at ways that we can do things remotely. But at the moment, you need to sort of be there on board, pull up the sediment trap, take off the data and reprogram it from the software connected to the laptop.
And is within these sediment traps, are you hoping to find like what Laura's talked about in the second objective, the corpse of certain phytoplankton and also fecal pellets that will build a picture about what proportion of carbon is buried and locked away or sequestered?
Exactly that. It's really interesting to look at the bottles, even when they initially come up, until you look under a microscope, but you can kind of see a variation in the amount of matter that's been collected just visually straight away looking at the bottles. When you get those samples under a microscope, you can see carcasses, as you say, of different copepods, all sorts, really find all sorts in the sediment trap.
That is so cool. I really want to know, can you see the preservation of a fecal pellet? Is it obvious?
Yeah. So some of the stuff is preserved really well because it sinks through this funnel into a bottle which has a preservative in already. So immediately, as soon as it's captured in that bottle, it's preserved as it was. So it's a really nice way to look at different times and different parts of the cycle.
What are your core
roles, Kat, that you assume on the cruises?
So my main role that I'm going to be working on is working on the underway. So as the ship goes along, it's got a whole variety of sensors that are constantly taking in measurements, such as ocean temperature, ocean salinity. We also take atmospheric measurements, so the wind direction, air temperature, and so on. And all of these measurements get stored onto the ship. So what the underway does is it cleans up the data a little bit, makes it available for other scientists, and then start replicating it so that if there are any interesting patterns, these can then get sent to the people who need them. And then also other parts will be looking at CTDs, so these instruments that we pop in the water, and as they go down and back up, they take measurements of conductivity, temperature, and depth, which is what CTD stands for. And then I'm sure also just being a helping hand around the ship for anyone who would need.
Do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy standing in your overalls whilst there's probably like it's blowing a hoolie outside and watching the deployment of instruments? Have you ever done something like that before?
Oh, I love it. I must admit, because my day-to-day usually is actually just sitting in front of a computer. So I think it's just such, I do feel really lucky that that is part of what I get to do. And I think also just being able to see so many different kinds of science, which I think in itself is quite a rare thing, because BioPol is so interdisciplinary. So then getting to see what the biologists do and all of that incredible work. So yeah, it's a really cool place to be.
Amazing. And also in terms of your free time, Kat, talking about the work-life balance, is this where you started to produce your Antarctic record?
Yeah, so that was actually a really great opportunity that came out of BASS. At BASS, there's a researcher called Nigel Meredith who has worked with space sounds and transforming them into music and has been doing so much work around that. And I went to the last BASS symposium and he had a whole store where he was showcasing his music, and I thought that was super cool, and we started talking, and then it came up that I was going to go on the BioPol cruise. And so he said, well, if I give you a microphone, could you just record random bits around the ship, random bits that you see, any interesting sounds, and we can see if these can get turned into music. So it was a really easy job, actually. I had a little microphone and just went around recording anything that was interesting. And also the team around also got really interested. So they themselves started saying, oh, there's this really cool sound. Have you heard this? Or have you tried to get a sound of this as well?
We are currently in an inlet of A23, the world's current biggest iceberg.
And it's such a different way of seeing the world. I think we're so used to a visual camera and photography, when actually you do get so much out of just hearing sounds and noticing the sounds around. And then I brought these back, and these got made into music by the incredible Kim Cunio. And then artwork got made by Diana Scarborough. And then it got made into an album called The Seventh Continent, now available on any platforms if people are interested.
Well, we'll link it in the show notes. That's such a cool initiative, Kat. Like, well done for doing that. Will you be pursuing it on BioPol too?
Yeah, and actually I think they've gotten quite excited and given me quite a few different microphones and being like, oh, you could try wiggle around the microphone now when you record things.
Cool. Can you record some like copepods? I don't know, would they make a sound?
I don't know, you'll have to ask a biologist about that, but if they do, that would be super cool.
What do you think Antarctica means to you? Is it like nothing you ever imagined?
Yeah, I think so. I think part of also what did attract me to Antarctic science was exactly that, the kind of idea of looking through the unknown, because of course there's space and space exploration, but we still don't know so much about our own planet. Of course there's a deep ocean that is put as one, but Antarctica has so few measurements. Like, we've only started getting satellite measurements from the 1970s, and before that we're using old whaling records of where they think the sea ice may have been on a specific day, which is just crazy.
Well, Kat, it's been lovely to speak to you, and enjoy your moor and training, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thanks. Bye.
Laura, what's it like processing all the samples coming back from Biopole 1 and Biopole 2? How many samples physically do you have to process as contributing towards your PhD?
Yeah, so I don't actually have too many to analyse for my PhD. So on Biopole 1, most of my work, I'd say, was collecting samples on behalf of other people. And I'm only keeping a small subset of my own work. So those are, I'd say, two-thirds done. It's been about 3 weeks of work so far, so pretty good. But in total, on Biopole 1, for the biogeochemistry section, I can't remember the total number, we collected just over 1,000 samples in 11 days. So it was a lot of samples to process, and they're being distributed to about 10 different researchers in the Biopole project. And then in Biopole 2, this is going to be even more with the amount of days of science we're doing. So it could be up to about 4,000 samples, but the final number is quite unclear. That's how many bottles we've packed for water to go in and filter papers to filter onto. So tons of samples, but Biopole 2 won't be my responsibility for analysing because I will have to finish my PhD. So this will all be for other people in the Biopole project. And there's a lot of collaboration in this way where not everybody who's involved in the project will be going on the field work. And usually what people are going for doesn't necessarily take all their time. So a lot of people will be collecting samples and doing work on behalf of other people, which they will then pass back when they get back. But I'd say for everybody analysing the samples from Biopole 1, we're still only scratching the surface a year later. There's still so much more to be done. So I think it will take a good few years to get through everything, really.
So, and what does Antarctica mean to you, Laura?
Yeah, I think, as Kat said, it is an absolutely amazing place that we know so little about. And thinking about it for me, it's also so interesting in terms of the politics about how it doesn't belong to any one country, and how the Antarctic Treaty works so that lots of countries are responsible for protecting it. So I guess my perspective is that I am very grateful that we at BAS get the responsibility to be able to do our part in understanding Antarctica and looking after it through the research we do. And I think it's a massive privilege that we're able to do that on behalf of the whole world, essentially.
I really like that angle. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. And finally, what is the how's the preparation going, and when do you set off for Biopole 2?
Preparation is good. It's like done now. We are just, looking ahead to the cruise. I'm flying in 10 days, so not too long to go. And we've got a week or so on the ship before it sails to, try and get a bit of work done in making everything secure so it's not moving about once we're at sea, and do what we can to set up the labs before we go in case there's any choppy weather. Hoping for smooth sailing, but you never know. Just looking forward to going.
Exciting. And everything will be on the ship that you need, because you obviously can't fly with all of that. So you had your cargo deadlines in August, is that right?
Yeah, chemicals was August, main cargo September, I think. So it's quite far in advance, and it comes around so quickly. By the time I get back from this next cruise, it's going to be April. And so it's really not too long before you start to think about the next cruise. And what you might need to pack, and then you forget what you've packed. So I just suddenly had a thought of, did I pack the cable for the sediment trap? And it's so many months, I mean, I'm sure I did, but there's always that stress, right? Because once you're on the ship, especially in Antarctica, you can't get any more consumables, you can't get anything you may have forgotten. So I think being organized is key.
Well, I hope you can take a spare sediment trap cable.
Yeah, I'm going to put one in my hand luggage just in case.
And finally, what does Antarctica mean to you? Why do you keep going back? And what makes you want to stay with the British Antarctic Survey for how many years?
2018. Good few years now. I've got another 2 years on this postdoc, so hoping to stick around for a little bit longer. I think, as Laura said, like the science is the main focus, is the main reason for going. Incredibly privileged to be able to go into these sorts of areas where not many people can go. And I think it really, when you're sat behind the computer for a long time, you might get lost in certain elements of your work. And then when you go into the field, and it makes it all just seem, everything is so real, and it really sort of brings you back to the main reason why you're doing things. So definitely the science as priority, but I mean, it's really amazing to see the wildlife out there. And just, I really enjoy the ship life as well, being part of a small community for a month or two. It's quite a unique experience, I think. So
nice to have. Absolutely. Well, good luck with Biopole 2 to all of you. And I hope you have a successful cruise. It was lovely to talk to you. That was such a great conversation with Emily, Kat and Laura. And if you'd like to hear more of the music Kat helped to create, the full album is called The Seventh Continent and is available from Bandcamp and other major streaming platforms. You can also learn more about Biopole via the website biopole.ac.uk. So much fascinating work happens on board BASS research vessels, and I know everyone whose project means spending time aboard really value their experience, as well as the great data that they're able to collect. If you're the kind of person who thrives on that kind of adventure, you'll love it at the bottom of the world. Do check out the jobs section on the British Antarctic Survey's website, where loads of jobs from working as a chef or engineer to support roles are listed. And if you learn something new when listening to this today, tell everyone you know. Make sure you leave a review on the Ice World page or from wherever you get your podcasts. In next week's episode, we'll hear from the project Rip Ice. Their acronym stands for Rift Propagation for Ice Sheet Models. And to collect data about ice sheet dynamics and its response to a changing climate, they camped on the Larsen C Glacier for 6 weeks. Until next time, I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you very much for listening.